my room to keep you warmer with less interruption. Get your home winterized with energy-efficient WindowNation windows. You'll be warmly rewarded with lower energy bills. Pay nothing until 2024. Plus, you get two free windows with every two you buy. Now is the best time for the best deal of the brand new year. Call WindowNation today at 866-90-NATION or visit WindowNation.com, WindowNation.com, and tell them Dan Rivers sent you.
All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Dania, your favorite local entrepreneur, here to kind of get people started in the way of making some of their ideas come to fruition. I started in business, and it was a little bit of an intimidating process, but it was a process, and all it took was watching people who were doing it well and emulating what it is that they were doing and trying to keep me out of getting in my own way. I always felt like I was, I'm this innovator, so I want to take what somebody else has done and make improvements to it, right? Make customizations to it. I want it to be mine. And I had to slow myself down. And first, like if I want to be a marathon runner, I'm not supposed to go and figure out how to do a marathon runner while eating cheesecake and ice cream as my daily. I want to do what marathon runners do. I want to get up the same time that they get up at. I want to eat the same stuff that they put inside them. And once I get to the point where I could be a marathon runner, then I do the customizations. And so all the great, the people with inspired imaginations, that's what we do. We hatch ideas. And I know there are a ton of you out there that are on the sidelines with great ideas, and it's hard to bring them to fruition because you too probably get in your own way. And that's just what we do. So this show is about sort of bringing some structure and some process to the world of ideas. And it's really tough because there's a certain emotion that goes along with your brand new baby ideas. And some of them don't even do well to other people's opinions or criticisms. So if you tell someone your idea about, this great business, it's almost like when you explain it, it's like explaining a dream, right? In your head, it's solid. You're in love with it. It could work. You're optimistic. But when you explain it, it doesn't sound quite as as grand as it did in your head. And it's easy for people that you care about to tell you about your idea and why it won't work. And rather than using that criticism as sort of like the steam and energy necessary to conquer, it's a little, it takes a little bit out of you. There's a little bit of wind out of your sails. It's a little, demoralizing. It's discouraging. And so this show is all about the inspired entrepreneur and, lending some of our encouragement, lending some of our energy or expertise. It's just a nice, friendly place to talk about those ideas where I'm not going to shoot you down and tell you that it can't be done, right? We're going to tackle it, problem solve it, and see if we can prop some people up. This will turn into an incubator of sorts where we take what happens here on the radio. We do it verbally so other people can listen in. I want to get a couple of you. I mean, maybe 50% of you listening will never open a business and you just like listening to it. But maybe there's like five every show that now will say, maybe I'll sit on the couch and I'll really give my idea a chance and I'll bring it up to my spouse and I'll put some time in on the weekends. Maybe I'll invest 30 minutes a day trying to put some details together. And then when I sit down and call Joe on that Saturday and talk about my business, I'll say, all right, here's the deal. And I'll tell you, this is the process no matter what. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Number one is you're going to write out the business plan, right? The business plan is your recipe. It is what you want it to become. Nobody has controls. It doesn't have to look a certain way. This is the plan. You're writing down as a reminder to yourself why you get out of bed. Because some days when you get out of bed, you're super inspired and you don't need a piece of paper to tell you what to do. But other days you wake up and you need somebody in your head, kind of giving you the reasonable discussion, maybe the nagging and the reminder of why you started doing this in the first place. And so I need both of those people. And so the business plan, when I'm in full focus and I know exactly what I want, I'll put it together. Now, there are two types of us out there. There are Hail Mariers and there are 5 yards, 2 yards, 3 yard rushers, right? And so I am an attrition guy. I'm way more comfortable taking 3 yard runs and doing it forever than I am keep throwing until I hit a Hail Mary, right? So for those of you who want to write a business plan and get the perfect addition right off the get-go, I'm not going to be much help.
But if you are someone who can take your ideas and structure into a little paragraph where you're giving yourself commentary for the future, then I'm your guy, because your business plan not only can take shape over a long period of time, but you can change your mind. You can edit it. You can white it out. You can highlight it. You can add, subtract, divide, whatever it is, because this is a plan with you and yourself. The only thing that we're doing here is we're eyeballing our ideas on a piece of paper. So the narrative that comes back at us is what we put there. And, you know, you get in on this. And, you know, if you ask any business owner where they spend most of their time, there is no spare time, right? So you just don't mull around and get to sit back in idle time and think about what you once thought about. It's a luxury at the beginning when you have lots of sit by the fire, drink some wine, and let your imagination go. Once you get going, you're on a rocket ship. You got rocket boosters pushing you through this. So you got to slow down and let your words guide you back into why you did this in the first place. So the business plan is step one. And this is not a punishing. This is not punitive. You're doing this to enable yourself. You're not doing this because now you have a homework assignment. If you do that, then you're not going to love the business plan. You're going to try to get through the business plan so you can get to the good stuff. But I want to impress upon you that a lot of the stagnation and the bailing on these ideas early, because that the structure of these ideas live, you know, 90% in the abstract, non-existent. There's 10% of it that you can totally do something about. You got brick and mortar, and you got email addresses, and you got physical money, and you got physical, physical things, stuff that you can taste and touch. But the rest of it is very elastic, right? And so that's where you're able to put some of these more abstract thoughts into language and then read it regularly. I read my business plans every morning, so I have to make sure that they are short and to the point. I know what I need to tell myself every morning. Joe, here's what's going to happen. You have a lot of time during the day, and you waste a lot of it. Carve out your most egregious time wasters and invest it in your new thing. When the new thing is propped up, then you're going to hand it off to someone who's way smarter than you. And then you're going to pick up the next thing, and you're going to prop it up, and you're going to hand it to somebody smarter than you. So every day I'm reminding myself that I'm not creating these ideas so I can keep it in my pocket for my lifetime. I'm creating these ideas so I can reward the genius and the skill set and the talent that we have in this this area with some great things to do, where those people aren't going to hatch the ideas. They're going to mature them and nurture them and you know, give them, you know, mix their talents in with the opportunities that I hand off. So that is my gig, and everybody's got to find out what their gig is. Couple of questions and all program long. If you want to get in touch with me, 330-729-9977. You can also text me at 333-1570. I'm on Facebook Live. If you're over there, you can text or write in the chats, either on YouTube or Facebook, and I'll answer those. This is a big one, and I'm going to talk about this on the computer show a little bit later on as well. But this question comes from a lot of business owners about billable time, right, versus non-billable time. And when you look at your model, where if you're especially in service oriented, your meter is running when, you're making your living when your meter is running. So anytime your meter is not running, right, you are not making revenue. And a lot of, especially new businesses, will give a lot of their services away for free as a marketing expense. So I see this in entertainers and DJs and stuff like that, where they will get the exposure of having done a service in hopes that you'll be able to display your talents and more people will ask you, you know, to do things. So to answer this question, how you determine billable versus unbillable time, you have to look at time as a one-for-one with as you do with money. You have a good concept of where you spend your money. When you make investments, you're not exactly getting a product, you're getting the promise of a product somewhere down the line, right? Well, when you invest time into something that you're not recuperating, you have to be able to complete the circuit and not make it be magical, right? So I'm willing, on my business plan, I'm willing to invest 20% of my revenues into marketing. right? So if I make $1,000 in a month, I'm going to take 20% of $1,000 and I'm going to invest it back into marketing to bring in the next generation of customers, the growth customers, right? And so then mathematically, I'm going to do a 5-to-1 return on my marketing dollars, and I'm going to keep changing my marketing until I get a 5-to-1 return. And that then I get back to my 100%. So time goes, like, how much of your day are you willing to invest at no charge in order to purchase someone, a paying customer, sometime in the future? So when I first started out in the computer business, there's a lot of people that had questions because computers, you know, were brand new. The adoption rate was very low. You had less than, you know, I'm guessing here, but probably 50% of the public didn't know what they were doing. 50% had, you know, an idea and were using it, even if in small capacities, but 50% of you didn't know what to do with this thing. And so I would have a lot of people that would start off the deal with, let me ask you a question, right? They didn't say, hey, I want to hire you to do this for me. They wanted to ask me a question because we are human beings. We like to, if we can do it ourselves, we want to. And, you know, and when I first started out, I wasn't a trusted authority on information, right? You know, now fast forward to today and people are super willing to just offload it to me because they know what I'm doing. They know I know what I'm doing and they trust that they're going to get a fair value for what they ask me to do. But back then it was like, I had to give some information away to ensure that trust, to ensure that the customer, one, I had to answer the question, I know what I'm doing. And number two, that they can trust me with the job that I was being handed. And so I knew what trade I was making. Now, if I did 100% of my day on giving unbillable time, I would have starved. There would be nothing to do. I wouldn't have grown my business because I was giving away my product for free. So I don't mind giving away product for free, but it's got to be able to purchase something. Now, what I determined early on was that I didn't want to devalue myself. So even if I gave it away, I needed to ask something in return. And it wasn't always necessarily money, but it had to be something. It wasn't free, right? I'm going to give to get. But if I gave you something, there, I have to know what completes the rest of that circuit. And sometimes it was, you know, I helped you out. Could you send me a couple people? You know, could you hand my name off to people? Could you do that? Could you do something? Here's the trade-off. I gave you what you asked for. I answered your question. Now, as you get busier and you have billable time that is competing with unbillable time. So let's just say I do a good job and I answer a bunch of questions. It purchases me a bunch of brand new customers. And then I fill up my day. I've got 8 hours of billable time lined up on the schedule. And somebody walks in the door and says, hey, let me ask you a question. Well, the let me ask you a question, that represents unbillable time. I don't need to have a customer. I don't need extra work. So am I going to sacrifice a billable hour for an unbillable hour? And so mathematically, I had to invent a place on the radio to send all of my let me ask you a question questions so it did not take the place of something that was billable. And because I was always told by my mentors that when it comes to the river, you do not dam up a river, you guide a river. So if there's a demand, you figure out a way to satisfy that demand. You don't put a dam up and say no. You figure out a way to take the demand and find some way to add value to it and benefit from it. And so to answer your question, billable versus unbillable time, and it a lot depends on the investment. If you need more business and you feel the best way is to invest some free time and to purchase something, the only thing I would recommend is number one, that you find a way that if you condition a marketplace that you are a person to ask questions to, then you're conditioning the marketplace to always do that. So you got to predict in the future what you're going to do with those questions when you don't need to use the answering of the questions. So you're going to just say, no, I don't have time for you and shut the door. And then you uncondition the marketplace that you no longer answer questions. And then the machine that you created that brings new business to you might be interrupted because you just closed off the pathway of new business. So that's the best way I can answer that question. I do not like devaluing. So if you can figure out a way to not make it free, if there's some kind of reciprocation, if there's some kind of transaction that goes with, I gave you information and then you gave me referral or you gave me something, I would feel a lot better about it. And, it's part of every, especially if you're really good at your job, people are going to want to talk to you about it. People want to, you know, ask you what your opinion is about it. And I do, you know, especially now as I'm doing a lot more consulting work than I had in the past, I'm answering a lot of questions that are just intended to help someone. I'm not asking for reciprocal because I'm not devaluing a product so much as, you know, I'm in the philanthropy side of my career. So I'm helping people come and find themselves. And so that's the objective. If I put down on the business plan, it is, what is Joe doing right now? It's finding little Joes out there that are confused and frustrated and about to give up, and give them hope and give them inspiration and give them information and make them not give up, because we need them. We need more people to take on the roles of you know, business and entrepreneurship. We need people to start businesses behind the guys that are retiring and selling business. I don't want a world full of over-commercialized, you know, chain stores. I need mom and pops. I need somebody to take up the reins and open these small businesses. Talking restaurants, retail, the whole thing. I've got to work against the grain to build, bring more people into this game. So, all right, 330-729-9977. You can also text me at 333-1570. You are listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back.
From your street to Wall Street, from around town to around the world, news is always happening, and we'll keep you informed and up to date.
It's important to stay informed these days more than ever.
News Radio 570 WKBN.
Has this ever happened to you when buying a car?
All right, great news. We took a look at your car, and we can give you around $8,000 for your trade-in.
Really? Is that all my car is worth? I was hoping to get a lot more.
Don't trade your car, truck, or SUV into a dealership blind. Know exactly what it's worth at GetMoreCheddar.com. In under 2 minutes, we'll give you an offer to get more cheddar for your trade-in at any dealership. That's right, at any dealership. Know before you go. And remember, your offer is guaranteed because we'll pay you what your car is worth, even if a dealership won't. Don't leave any cheddar on the table. Get more for your vehicle today, only at GetMoreCheddar.com.
Offer valid with visual inspection and appraisal verification from Cheddar Auto Center.
Get more cheddar, Cheddar Auto. Get more cheddar, Cheddar Auto.
According to scientific research, the brain begins to decrease memory and cognitive skills as early as your mid-30s. Recent advances have discovered an incredible memory breakthrough that's been anticipated for years. This discovery has seen memory repair in 21 days or less, with a huge boost in concentration and performance. This memory brain booster is called Neuroxin. Neuroxin is now conducting a national memory research survey on improved brain performance, and you can participate. Participants have witnessed an increase in brain power by up to 89%, with noticeable results in just days. It's time to take care of your body's most important resource and experience a focus and clarity like never before. Call now to register while space is available, and take advantage of Neuroxin's free bottle offer while supplies last. Space is limited, so call now.
Call 800-605-9618. That's 800-605-9618. Free bottles for a limited time, so call now. 800-605-9618. 800-605-9618.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show, and this I'm Joe Danier, your local entrepreneur. Talk about things that are happening in business. 330-729-9977. We talked to a lot of in the city of Struthers. We're putting together a business incubator where we're actually going out to regular citizens and asking them some feedback on, you know, if you were to start a business, what would that look like? And the expectations and reality were a little bit different. Going into it, I thought we're going to have a lot of people that were looking through their sort of like the stuff that they could do, and then thinking that they were going to just, you know, very methodically grow a hobby up to something that might have some marketability. And what I found was there are actually some pretty developed business ideas that are just on pause right now. And I can never figure out, you know, how somebody gets an idea up to a certain point and then totally just pauses out, just are totally waiting. You'd expect it's sort of like a money thing where you start getting to, well, I got to buy some equipment, or I got to hire a person, or I got to, you know, buy a, a building or, you know, starts getting the financial, but it's really never money. Like, if you ask them, they're going to be out money, but it gets to a point where it starts to it starts to poke holes into their brain a little bit, and it goes from what's just a thought to start something that if I go beyond this point, it's going to become a thing. But I watch people who, you know, make cornhole boards and do car detailing. Landscaping's a big one. And, you know, this is stuff that maybe they've done professionally and they're like, hey, you know what? I could break off and do that totally. Sometimes it's inventions where someone saw something that didn't work well and they fabricated something. We have people that are amazingly good with woodworking and metalworking. So we've got a lot of those people who are capable of doing it. I ran into a guy a little while ago about, you know, he had a CNC machine that can cut metal. Right. And so I don't know what they were doing with the CNC machine, but it was like, maybe we can cut some designs out of it, you know, stuff, decorative stuff for people in front of people's houses and put their name and address on it. And they found that, you know, they found a niche by looking at a tool and saying, okay, well, I can do practical machining with this, or I could do decorative, you know, end user retail with this. And they're finding their way. So sometimes it's just you look in your garage and you see that you've got a something, and whether it's a lathe or some power tools or whatever. And then you're like, you know what? I'm going to try. Yeah, I need some money and do a side hustle. And I enjoy doing that kind of work. And then the other side of that, we have some people who really like cars and they find themselves detailing their own cars and they really like detailing it. But then you get them slammed under a car for 12 hours a day working, even if it was the most money in the world, it takes the joy out of something they love doing sort of on their own terms when they convert it to something that they have to do every day from that point. So, you know, a lot, you know, I have to convert people to get the idea out there, prove it in the marketplace, put some plans behind it to see if it's a doable thing, get them to stop before all they end up doing is owning their own job and turning in the business that could survive if you hired the skill to an employee rather than the owner equals the employee. All of us are ready and willing to work our business for a period of time before we bring in an employee. I mean, think about it. Like if you just got an R&D project, you get through the engineering, you prove that it's a thing, you don't hire someone and say, you know what, this idea is not working out, so you're gone, right? You make sure that it's been properly investigated and developed before you bring in a person who's then going to work that job. So if you want to do detailing, you be willing to spend a couple weeks, you know, knowing your product and knowing your pricing and knowing how long things take. And then, you know, give yourself 6 months to do it yourself before you hand it off to the next person. And I think when you have sort of that personal connection with the job, that it makes it easier because then you can really value the workers who are doing that job. So people behind a desk might not know the sweat that goes into it or the hardship or on your back or whatever. And then so you can appropriately value those people and make sure they get compensated for the job. And that way also, if they have a question about they're struggling in the job, you've done it. You mastered it. You can show and be a great educator and teacher. So no fear, you know, from that standpoint. We have a ton of questions that have to do with sort of like product and product distribution and getting raw materials and these sourcing materials now that people are struggling to put stuff on the shelves because it's taking, you know, 6 months. And in the electronics deal, it was taking every bit of 4 or 5 weeks to do and get equipment that used to take 2 or 3 days. And so we had to part with a whole bunch of our revenue, our resources to purchase equipment, you know, 3 months in advance, just so that we'd have adequate supply for our customers. And it'll all get fixed. I mean, we're going to sell through that equipment and then we'll be able to like replenish our reserves when this all shakes out. But you know, these product cycles are kind of rough. And if you take a retailer and you starve them out of their, you know, their stuff that's sellable, I mean, how much of the revenue do you cut off? That people aren't going to just keep buying if they can't buy what it is that they want. So, a lot of good questions that have come through. Theo, I see you out there and, I see your phone call. I'll make sure when we come back from this break, I will start with you. So if you would hang on the line, I'd appreciate it. 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back.
More than one in three people will face cancer in their lifetime. Unfortunately, fear can stop you from getting your cancer screening, but it won't stop cancer. Early detection can save your life. Don't wait for symptoms to appear to act. Cancer screening is safe, effective, and accessible for everyone, including free or low-cost screening programs. Go to cancerscreeninfo.com right now for free screening resources and recommendations from the American Cancer Society. Don't wait. Early detection can save your life. Go to cancerscreeninfo.com today. cancerscreeninfo.com.
18-year-old Jamiah Brooks has been indicted on charges from an arrest back in December. He and a juvenile are accused of firing at a house on Ivanhoe on the city's south side. The Canfield Board of Education has approved a bond levy for the May 3rd ballot. The levy would be 6.9 mils and raise nearly $108 million over its 37-year span to build new schools to replace Hilltop, C.H. Camel, and Canfield Village Middle School. Former Newton Falls Police Chief Eugene Pixler filed a notice. He intends to appeal his firing. He was terminated earlier this month by Newton Falls Council. And parking bans are being put in place ahead of the expected winter storm in Mahoney County so far. Austin Town and Camel, 6 p.m. Sunday to 6 p.m. Monday. New Middletown, noon Sunday till noon on Tuesday. In Trumbull County, Bezetta and Liberty Townships from 6 p.m. Sunday to 6 p.m. Monday. Niles, 8 p.m. Sunday through 3 p.m. Monday. And Girard, Sunday, 6 p.m. till Monday at 8 p.m. From the Power Chevrolet Buick GMC of Calcutta, Ohio Newsroom, I'm Dave Price.
We're a country of so many voices, yet some still struggle to be heard. Let your voice be heard. News Radio 570, WKBN. For your home or business, call Mazza's Heating and AC in Girard, 330-545-6063. Your factory authorized Bryant dealer. Now, the Storm Team 27 forecast.
Partly cloudy skies for your Saturday, high temperatures in the mid-20s, overnight dipping down into the single digits with mostly clear skies. Tomorrow, we're watching for increasing clouds, and this is going to be leading up to that winter storm that will be starting after sunset, where we're looking at heavy snowfall for that night. But during the day on Sunday, high temperatures will be in the mid-30s. From the Storm T27 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Felicia Woody.
iHeartRadio Earth is here with little tips for a healthier planet. It sure feels good to step into a warm car after letting it heat up for a few minutes. However, this practice wastes gas, increases emissions, and pollutes the air. Limit idling your car to no more than 3 minutes to save money at the gas station and improve air quality. Brought to you by iHeartRadio Earth and the National Environmental Education Foundation. To find more tips for smarter, sustainable living, or to take action in your own community, go to iHeartRadio.com/earth.
Right now, we have the absolute best selection of cars, trucks, and SUVs at the Stadium Pre-Owned Superstore. Our lot is stocked with all the makes and models of pickup trucks you're looking for. And if you want an SUV, we've got a Terrain, Trax, Equinox, or Encore at the lowest prices anywhere. If you want to shop online, log on to StadiumGM.com to see our great selection and even fill out your credit app. And don't forget, we'll buy your leased car and you can make thousands. All at the store that always gives you more, the Stadium GM Pre-Owned Superstore in Salem. 3.9% APR, tax, title, and fees extra.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-777-1225. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-777-1225. That's 800-777-1225. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-777-1225. 800-777-1225.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Daniel, your host. We talk about things that are happening in business and especially to the small business owners or those aspiring to become. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Theo. Theo, you're on the Bottom Line Business Show. How can I help you?
I just thought I would chime in a little bit. One of the things that I do, and it's a very unique item, I like to go to tractor shows, and they call them thresher shows. They're all over the country. They do everything the old way just to demonstrate what the historical way things were done back in the day, and you'll see anything from John Deere's to Massey Ferguson's and International Harvesters. But being a business that I'm in a printing, what I do now is I've collected the old cuts that they used to use back in the day in the 40s and 50s and 60s to make advertising literature. I will take the old tractors and the logos and all the defunct businesses, you know, that are no longer making anything, from tractors to implements to scenery, just and make greeting cards, notepads, posters, all kinds of different stuff. And who I sell these to are people who say, oh, my dad used to have a tractor like that, or he used to have a rake like that, or different things. Posters were like the early years of whatever line of machinery it is. Greeting cards, thank you cards. They have in a few, some of the shows I'll go to, I have Christmas cards with the different rivals of the machineries, brand names of the older stuff, and they'll send them back forth jokingly. And I sell anywhere from a sandwich bag full, Ziploc shut, to grocery bags full of this stuff. It depends on the person.
And so how do you distribute it? Are you doing like online or just at shows, or how are you getting?
I go right to the shows and I sell them direct to the person, but I have yet to put any of that online, which I've got to get. I can't get past the, what's that one program they make websites with that's free, you download it. I can't remember it anyway, what it is, but, can always never get past the dang thing to open up and run on the computer. But I got to start messing around with that. But I do have on the back of the notepads where people can call and reorder, and they do that. So, but I go right direct to the people that be interested in it. The old one thing I do is the old Train Heralds, which is, they're not logos, they're called Train Herald. And that's like the Erie Railroad or that kind of thing. Basically, you know, I can go to train shows or tractor shows or wherever. It's just fun. Get to meet a lot of people.
So how'd you get into it? Like, what got you started?
Well, I have a printing company, and a lot of the, there's like a boom in letterpress right now. It's been since the late 80s all the way up till now. There's people that want training in some of this old equipment that, you know, is in a back room of an old print shop or a printing company that got covered up, or it's just shoved in a corner full of dust. Some cases even sat outside. But I do printing specialty for manufacturers who, well, to give you an example, I print a tag on the back, the paper that's on the back of a notepad, that real thick paper, chipboard. I print on that, and I print a spacer material for a brick that's used in blast furnaces and kilns for cement mix and stuff, and it's a spacer. When they turn the heat on, it burns away and the brick swells tight. So, and I've done printing for 35, 37 years, and it's just one way now to do something that I enjoy, different kind of printing. It's a hobby, basically, but it's getting popular all over the country and all over the world. There's Facebook pages everywhere, and I've had the pleasure of teaching people how to run a press called a Heidelberg windmill, which is made in Germany, but it's a type press that any print shop that ever had it always made money from it, because you do perfing, numbering, scoring, and actually printing on it. Use metal type. Four rolls, perf rolls, that type of thing.
So, do you want to name your company? Give you a little bit of a plug.
It's Bell Printing Company.
And if somebody wanted to find you or talk to you about getting something done, how would they get a hold of you?
It's on Google. Just Google it. Bell Printing Company.
Bell Printing Company. Okay. Well, why don't you check in with me from time to time and let me know how it's going along. If it starts to grow or develop beyond just a little hobby, I want to know about it. Give me a call back and keep updates with me.
Sure. sure. There's a book I get every year that this has all the shows all over the country, from all the way from Florida all the way up to the Dakotas. I mean, there's just some fantastic things that are going on with that. There's a gentleman, his name is Corey Anderson. Listen to this. He bought a forging company because he was casting different parts for his own use and started a business. And he built a case from 1905 or something like that. There was only 20 of them made. And when the wars came, they melted them down to make tanks and stuff with them. So there was none left. Well, he went to the Case Racing Company, Racing, in Wisconsin, and got the plans, blueprints for this 150-horse steam-powered traction engine tractor. And he built it from scratch 4 years ago. And he's out there west, and when they demo, he's pulling 20 bottom plows with it, plowing up the earth just as a demo for the fun of it. You know, it's just amazing how people are so into this history stuff.
Right.
And I'm right in there with it, selling collectibles. And, you know, I'll go to a show, second year I'll go or third year I'll go, and they'll say, well, you know, I haven't used those yet. I'm keeping them. And I said, well, I'll never stay in business if you don't write on them and use them.
Right. All right, Theo, thank you for checking in. Appreciate you sharing your story with me. Make sure you do check back. And with that sort of articulated there is, you know, that we went when we had a bunch of this analog stuff, and when all of the industries transferred over to digital, it was more exact, it was easier, production costs were down. It almost created sort of like a legacy or an older version of all of that has some charm to it. And so when you get printed materials that are coming off an old press, that, you know, it's sought after more because it becomes something that's not as prevalent in the marketplace. So I like that people are able to go back and, you know, take some of that, fish some of that stuff out from the ashes of what used to be and making some products with it. I wish you a ton of luck, Theo, on that. Now, the second part of that was when you have the engineering skills or the mechanical skills to be able to take an old project and refabricate it. I've got a little bit of a fear that maybe our culture is sort of losing that ability. We're so used to outsourcing, you know, everything that we need to, you know, the commercialization, where you're not going to a local fab shop and having something made. You're going to like national or international, you know, big firms to have things manufactured. And what I like about the individual is that if I need something whipped up, usually your local fab shop will charge you and be able to do low quantity runs. Well, when you go with bigger outfits, you know, they really don't want to, you know, give the attention of their production line for somebody who wants, you know, five of something done. So whether or not you're producing, you know, individual widgets or T-shirts or whatever, I like the fact that there's still enough people that have the skill set to be able to make stuff like that. And I wish there would be, you know, more of it, so that, you know, I'm not a big fan of outsourcing production to other countries, because really the only thing you get out of that is price, right? You make lower cost goods, and it's really good for a certain segment, but it's not really good for a healthy economy for all of your stuff to be so outsourced to people that are outside of economies of your control, right? And so that if I can deal from someone in my local, the town that I live in, I do. If I can't, then it's region. And if it's not region, then it's state. And, you know, and I just keep going outward until I find someone that can satisfy the order. And it's not all over the place. There's some stuff that I buy in the blind, not knowing where it was created. But if given a choice, if I have the time to contemplate it, it's always going to be a consideration that I want to support the local guy so he can keep doing it. I mean, what are we going to do after all the local guys that could run one-offs go away? Then we're stuck with one option, which is not a great option for small business. We need mom and pops. We need smaller run, you know, outfits to, and that's how, you know, most of the entrepreneur and the manufacturing happened, is that you had, you know, one metal fabricator that was next to one tool maker that was next to one raw materials producer, and then they all got together and did their own thing. You know, again, in business, it's under, you know, it's not appreciated how much, yes, price is a portion of it, right? But it's not the only portion. As a consumer, you're looking for price as the dominating factor when you shop. So it's one of those things where you got to stretch the number of dollars that you have in your bank account as far as possible. So getting the product for the least amount of money is one of, not the only, but it's a primary consideration. Well, in business, like, it's very unlikely. My computers are nothing. I don't think there's anything in my office that I go after the least amount of dollars. There are cheaper hard drives that I can use in my systems, right? And I don't. So my hard drives maybe cost $65 or $75. There are $25 that have the same capacity, and you would probably, as the end user, would not know the difference, but I do, right? I buy something for a specific. I write out what I want to be included. I want a product that's going to be consistent, that it's going to last a little while, that's supporting a vendor that I, you know, I want my money going to, and all of these other things get written into that plan. It's not always just, you know, that price, but it's up to the commercial producers and the retailers that we have to put those judgments in, because we're going to get shopped, and whatever that we sell, we get to replace. So if I sell computers that cost 20% more, but there's value, then I was an option that counters the lowest price. So what I'm getting at is that both products in the marketplace are warranted. So if there's a cheap product that maybe has a higher risk to it, then someone's willing to pay the risk for the cost, then they're free to do that. And if there's one that has less risk but more cost, then you're free to do that. But both products are needed, because there's consumers aren't all single, priority. They're not shopping from the same priority. So thank you for that phone call. It allowed me to go on that little spiel. This question is about protecting intellectual property. Should I copyright? Should I patent? How far should I go with my overall product? Okay, so here's the way I usually lay this out with people, because this does come out a lot. And in the world of business, intellectual property is a very valuable thing. So if you have an idea, and, you know, okay, so let me first explain me and why I do things a little bit different. You won't see me doing what I'm going to tell you to do. Number one, I come up with a brand new idea like every 42 seconds, right? And I believe in infinite. So if someone comes along and takes an idea that I was working on, I'm cool with that. Like, maybe they can develop it faster and better than I can. So they go off, I'm going to move on to my next one. I'm not real protective about having an idea taken from me. I will willingly give an idea if it means someone's going to make it into something that's awesome. So I don't put a lot of resources into playing prevent defense. I have enough of a supply that even if there's some loss, I'm okay with that. And I might one day see something in the marketplace that was my design that I didn't get anything for, and I'm kind of cool with that. So I'm a little different in that respect. Now, some of you that maybe have, this is your one idea, you don't come up with them, and now it's time to protect it. Now, here's what you have to do. Number one is you need to consult with someone who does this for a living. And there are patent attorneys, there are people who can give you better advice than I can. Now, if you go around town and you share your idea with a bunch of people and they develop, you know, they take your idea and they run with it, you have to make sure that you've protected it legally some way. So if they do produce it, then you can prove that the idea came from you, and, you know, you can have them cease producing the product and take control of your design, but you have to do it in a certain way that's acknowledged by the legal system, because that's where it is. We're challenged this as in legal. Now, we've worked with a bunch of companies that develop a product and never do anything with it until it is properly protected. And then they still don't do anything with it, and they just sell the protected idea to somebody who can make use of it. And that is a whole flavor of business where a lot of people that come up with these ideas never want to really produce it, but they want to see the idea come to fruition. So we'll say, you know, an inventor comes up with an idea. We'll say, like, Nikola Tesla designs an AC induction motor, and he's not going to produce any of them himself. He's going to put a prototype together. He's going to take it to, a financier. Financier writes the check. The check then pays for the to be built. And then the person that invented, who owns the patent on the design, create gets a royalty from anything that's sold. So if something happens every quarter, sold 1,000 of them, you make 20 cents per whatever, and they cut you a check. And that's how you make your money, by having your patent or your intellectual property exercised in the marketplace. You don't have to be idea creator, production person, distributor, and all of that. You can just pick one of those, and you just have to partner with other people who do those other parts. I know people who do it all, and I know people who do one of those segments and everything in between. So to answer your question is, if you need to protect, if it's an idea that you fear that somebody else, may capitalize on, then absolutely use our legal system, use our patent process, use our copyright process, use, paper and pen, and make sure that the world knows that it's your idea so that you can be the one. Now, again, most of us, I think I've seen more people. I had one friend who did a circuit, an integrated circuit design, and he dragged his feet for years about protecting the patent or getting it patent, and he never did. So I can almost guarantee that this guy still has a design that's never been produced, never been protected, never been stolen, but never been exercised as well. 330-729-9977 or text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back.
Life comes at you fast and hard, which is why we at Travco Behavioral Health are here to support you and your family with all your behavioral health needs. Whether you're struggling with substance addiction, mental health, depression, or anxiety, the last thing you need is to feel isolated or alone. Travco Behavioral Health rallies around you, your friends, and your family to provide support and help you handle the hard times. You are not alone. Visit WeCareMoreOhio.com to find help and hope. That's WeCareMoreOhio.com.
Your money is most likely managed through some sort of financial technology. The security and protection that goes with that technology has never been more important. Tune in to Your Money with Leo DiPrilli on 570 WKBN this Sunday at 10 a.m. to learn more.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, your host, talk about things in business. So we got a couple more minutes to maybe ask a couple more questions. This one comes up quite a bit. This is about a consultant who wants to set their pricing. And so the premise for setting pricing, I do two things. Number one, pricing is not a static thing. Pricing is an agreement between two people. You price it. They say yes. That's a transaction that that is created by that agreement. And so, but your pricing, what to come up with. When I first started the consulting business, I was way undervalued. I had no idea what to price it at. I didn't know what would fetch it. If I set a price and they said yes, I felt it was kind of, it was priced correctly. And I probably was wrong. So my methods now for finding pricing is I use the marketplace to find out find the person that's most like me, does the same thing as me. I get an idea for what it is, and then find out what they are charging. You use what exists in the marketplace as an example of something that you emulate. I used at the beginning. If you want to be a marathon runner, you find out what a marathon runner does and do that, right? And then you can figure out what the differences are. You get to know the formulas that go into production, so then you get to have a better idea of your starting point when you get further in. But your first one, you got to start with somebody who's doing it first. And then when you do the hypothetical math, I start my businesses on paper first. I'm saying if I go to 100% capacity or 75% capacity or 50% capacity and charging this amount and trading 12-hour days for that amount, and then here's what's going to be in the account. Here's what I'm going to use to pay my insurances and my utilities and my rents and my payrolls and my marketing costs. And then here's what's left over. So if all of this happens how I want, am I happy with that number? And if I'm not happy, then I have to increase the prices until, I've increased my prices until I've covered all of my expenses plus had established a margin that I'm happy with and I'm willing to take the risk for. And so if I'm, you know, if I raise my prices, then I have to make sure that I proportionally raise the value that I'm willing to trade. So if I start off at $50 an hour, and then I'm like, oh, well, I need to raise it to 70. In my mind, I got to be like, well, I got to give $70 more worth of value. I got to make sure that I'm giving more than I'm charging, so that, you know, even if my competition is less or even if my competition is more, I have to make sure that I know where my one for one is, what I'm trading and what they're getting. And in the computer business, we took what, and this is a hypothetical, like let's just say a company had IT staff. Well, IT staff would have a certain charge, and you would get a person there 40 hours a week fixing stuff. And so if you didn't want to pay $60,000 for an internal IT staff, I had to divide that out by the number of months or weeks or hours. And I had to make sure that I was giving a proportion. Well, so let's just say you didn't have to hire an IT staff, you hired me, but half the rate. Well, then you'd probably expect about half the benefits of having that IT staff. So the benefits that I would cut out of having an internal IT staff, maybe the important ones are at the top, like emergencies, I would be there, and maintenances, I would be there, and printers, I would be there. But the bottom ones, you know, being able to, on a dime, be able to just ask somebody a question, that one might not be on the menu list. And so you establish, and so that when I explain it, ours is in comparison to hiring a full-time staff, you don't have to, and you can pay us less than that, right? But still have the advantages of having an IT staff. There wouldn't be a whole lot of people that would say no to that, especially if, you know, you're talking to a business, this is all commercial. So you're talking to a business owner who having, you know, a business owner can say, hey, money's tight right now. I'm going to pause IT for a little while. And they can do that, right? We can get caught up and not do some maintenances, and we have some stuff. If you have an on staff IT person, it's harder to pause that person without disrupting a life. I'm a vendor, so I have tons of customers. I have tons of work, and I have tons of opportunities. So if you move me and use me less, then I could be used somewhere else a little bit more, and it's all good to me. I don't really feel the pinch. A human being is a little bit better. So that's when I set the narrative and I explain what you're actually purchasing. You're not really doing IT services. You're purchasing the need not to have someone on staff. So that's why we established a weight to that, where we've had customers because of that model that started using us almost like we were full time, and then it was time for them to hire their own place. So we almost had to give it did not benefit from us to give them the advice that they needed to replace us with a full time, but they were paying us more then, and so my formula didn't match, and it was time to tell them it's time to hire someone internally. And so to answer your question, how do you know what to charge? You know, most of us guess wrong first, but you get to every year, every January, you get to reset your pricing. Compare what happened. Maybe you were priced too low and like, hey, we made a mistake. We got to raise it by 20%. Or maybe you're too high and you need to lower it by a little bit. But use each year as a reset. And most of your customers will go right along with you because you're being honest about it. And they understand that you can't work the job for less money than it costs you to do the job. So, all right, we're done for the business show for today. And then we're going to come back at 1 o'clock and talk about computers. We haven't done one of these in a little while. So if you have any questions about technology or just want to talk about things that are happening in that market, feel free to give me a call. 330-729-9977 or text 333-1570. You've listened to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN.
America's number one tool store, Harbor Freight Tools, has a store opening near you. Visit our newest store off Park Avenue Plaza and Smock Highway in Meadville. Hurry in.